This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies in for Terry Gross, who's off this week. My guest, Jeff Bridges, can't remember the first time he was on a movie set, literally. He wasn't yet 2 years old when he appeared in the 1951 film The Company She Keeps with his mom, Dorothy Dean Bridges. Jeff Bridges and his brother Beau grew up in show business. They sometimes appeared in the TV series Sea Hunt as kids, which starred their father, Lloyd Bridges. Jeff Bridges got his first Oscar nomination at the age of 22 for his role in the 1971 film The Last Picture Show. He's earned 5 more since and finally won the Best Actor Oscar for the 2009 film Crazy Heart. Among his other films are Heaven's Gate, Starman, Jagged Edge, The Fabulous Baker Boys, The Big Lebowski, and True Grit. He's generating Oscar buzz again for his role last year in the modern western Hell or High Water. The film also stars Ben Foster and Chris Pine as two brothers who are robbing small-town branches of a bank in West Texas. Bridges plays an aging Texas Ranger investigating the crimes. In this scene, he's speaking with a witness, then other investigators after one of the robberies.
I know their faces was covered, but could you tell their race? I'm black, white.
Their skin or their souls?
Let's leave their souls out of this for now.
Why? From around here, somewhere, is my guess. You know, from their voices.
Uh-huh.
Young County says same deal with the branch and Olney.
Excuse me. Do they have video?
Same deal all the way around.
Doesn't Walmart sell all sorts of electronic equipment? My word, get your hands off that. Oh, these boys... They aren't done yet, I'll tell you that.
How come?
Well, they're patient. They just sticking to the drawers, not taking the hundreds. That's the bank's money. We can trace that. They're trying to raise a certain amount, that's my guess. It's going to take a few banks to get there.
Well, Jeff Bridges, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me about this character, Marcus, this Texas Ranger, and how you got him.
Well, this fellow... This Texas Ranger I'm playing, Marcus, in this movie, he's going through the pain of retirement, something that actors, we can act on our deathbeds, so it's something that I had to do a little research about that. Fortunately, Taylor Sheridan, the writer of Hell or High Water, really knew what he was talking about. His cousin, Parnell McNamara, was a marshal, but he had to go through retirement, and it was very helpful for me to be able to talk to him and find out what that was all about. And also, we were fortunate to have on the set for many days Joaquin Jackson, who was a very notable Texas Ranger. He's written several books. He was just so wonderful to have him on set, not only to tell us, what our uniform should look like, how Texas Rangers behave and all that, but just to have him in the room and pick up the, his vibes and to have his support and his blessing was really important.
Yeah, were there any gestures or movements or turns of phrase or inflections that you picked up from him?
I remember he had a... when he took his hat off, he'd like to put it on his boot. That's something I kind of ripped off from him.
One of the fun things about the film is your relationship with your partner, Alberto, who is played by Gil Birmingham. This character is half Mexican-American, half Comanche. You want to just talk a little bit about that? It's a friendship with an edge, isn't it?
Yeah. They're dear friends. But Marcus teases him terribly throughout the film with racial slurs and so forth. One of the first things I do when I'm preparing for a part is I kind of look inside myself and see are there any aspects of myself that might be handy in portraying this character. And my grandfather, Fred Simpson, was a terrible teaser, and my brother, Beau, he inherited that teasing gene, used to really tease me, in an awful way. and, you know, get me in crying and stuff. And my mom would say, oh, that's just because he loves you so much, you know.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I realized that that was probably true, you know, that it was an expression of intimacy. You know, I know exactly what buttons to push to get a, you know, a rise out of you. That's how much I love you, or how much, that's how well I know you. So that was something I could kind of tap into playing the role.
Yeah. You know, a lot of us tease our friends about them being clumsy or bad drivers or whatever. It's a little touchier when you're talking about their ethnicity. And
I agree with that. That I think a lot of that has to do with how you were raised, what part of the country you were brought up in. Another touchstone for me in this film, and other times I'm playing Texans. I played quite a few Texans or Westerns, is a fellow that I met on the last picture show called, his name is Lloyd Catlett, and he had a small part in picture show, and he was also hired to teach us California kids how to be Texas kids. And we became friends, and now turns out we've done over 70 films together. He's my stand-in for all these movies. He's always kind of like a constant thread through the movies. And, you know, when we first met, he, like the friends he grew up around, would use racial slurs and stuff. He was funny, not in a necessarily mean way. It was just those were the terms. Those were the words that were used. And hanging out with the California kids, we said, oh, don't say that, Lloyd, you know. And he was, you know, full of love. But that's just how he was raised.
Well, I wanted to talk about The Last Picture Show, because it's fascinating to me that, you know, this is your most recent film. That one you did when you were, what, 22 years old, right? This is the story of another film set in that same flat West Texas countryside about a small dying town, kind of a dying way of life in a way.
Yeah.
And it's centered in part on some high school kids. I thought we'd listen to a scene. You played Dwayne Jackson, who was a football player, dated the rich girl, the pretty girl in town, JC. And the scene we will hear is later in the film when the two of you have broken up and you've graduated from high school. You're coming back to town after working in the fields, oil fields. And here you've heard that your best friend, Sonny, who's played by Timothy Bottoms, has been dating JC. And so you have this little conversation. Your character, Dwayne, speaks first. Let's listen.
Seen old Leroy last week. Said he thought you and JC had been going together a little.
Yeah, we have, little. She's been kind of bored, so once in a while we go out eat Mexican food or something.
Well, I hear that ain't all you've been eating.
Well, whoever told you that don't know what he's talking about. Sure, I've been going with her. Why not?
I never said I would blame you for it. I don't blame you much. Except I thought you'd do me that way. I thought we were still best friends.
We are. What you so mad for? I never done nothing to you.
Well, I guess my girl ain't nothing to you.
I ain't her.
Hell, you ain't.
Well, I ain't. She's not your girl anymore.
She is my girl. I don't care. We did break up.
You don't even live here.
I didn't make no difference. I always live here. I'm getting her back. I'm telling you right now. She's going to marry me one of these days when I get a little bit more money.
She won't marry you.
Sure she will. We always meant to get married.
She's going off to college soon. I doubt I'll ever get to go with her again myself when she gets off. Yeah, I never saw what it could hurt to go with her this summer, though. She's never going to marry you.
She is, by God. Don't you tell me she won't.
And that's our guest, Jeff Bridges, with Timothy Bottoms in The Last Picture Show, directed by Peter Bogdanovich, a 1971 film. That's going back to the early days of your career. Not the earliest, but some early days.
Yeah.
You were nominated for an Oscar for that role. And as you look back, I mean, you've had so much experience doing so many roles, and I'm sure your techniques and preparation have evolved over the years. I'm wondering kind of what you hear when you listen to that performance.
Well, it brings back the time, certainly. One of the things, if I, you know, listen to or watch movies, listen to things like that, it's almost like watching a home movie or, you know, listening to a past experience that you had. And I'm remembering Tim, you know, who's such a, you know, wonderful actor. And I can remember shooting that scene, going around that car. It all happened around a car. And me cracking a beer bottle over and him putting his eye out and all of that. And also, it's, you know, I'm hearing Larry McMurtry's wonderful dialogue. It's always a pleasure to speak his words.
Did you immerse in that life at all, the life of a small Texas town?
Oh, yeah. Not only the small Texas town itself, but our own little kind of town that we created. You know, those were some, you know, Ellen Burstyn and Cloris Leachman, Ben Johnson, wonderful actors, you know, so hanging out with those guys, Eileen Brennan. We had a wonderful time making that film. And we knew, even though we were all pretty green at that time, we all knew we were involved in something very special.
You could tell then, huh? Yeah,
that movie to me kind of just sits by itself. You know, there's no movies like it, and it's not like any movie. It was shot in black and white when movies were in color. You had Peter Bogdanovich, I think it was his second film.
Right.
And he was a big fan of Ford and Hawks and those guys. So that sensibility is in there that really wasn't in fashion at the time.
Well, the Last Picture Show, that's not the oldest clip that we have. I want to play a scene here of, now we'll talk about it afterwards, a scene of a kid and his dad on a scuba diving boat. And the kid's gotten into some mischief on a dive. Let's listen.
Oh, my God.
Kelly, if you've got something to say, now say it.
They didn't get all the dynamite out. There's still some there.
Where?
Where we were diving, there was a buoy with a sign that said A-Zone on it.
Why didn't you say this before?
I was afraid. I promised.
Promised who?
Joey.
Pete, head for that A-Zone buoy.
A little taste of our guest Jeff Fridges. What were you, 8 or 9 then?
Yeah, that's wild.
Acting with your dad, Lloyd Bridges, in the series Sea Hunt, which I remember watching. Your dad played Mike Nelson, this diver who went around rescuing people and besting criminals and all. You learned a lot from your dad. I read that you'd sit on the bed and he would talk to you about teaching you the basics of acting.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he, you know, especially with Sea Hunt, he'd get me on the bed there, you know, and teach me how to, you know, make it feel like it's happening for the first time and not to just, you know, wait for him to stop speaking and then I'd do my line. He says, you got to listen to what the other guy's saying and let that, you know, have some effect on what you're going to say. And now go out of the room, now come back in and do a completely a different version of, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. Later on, I got to work with him as an adult. We did a movie called Tucker together and also Blown Away. And that was a wonderful experience. And I learned probably the most important thing I ever learned from him on those movies. And that was the way he generally approached the work, which was with such joy. He enjoyed what he was doing so much. And he was, you know, really wanted all his kids to go into acting because he loved it so much.
Yeah, it's interesting, you know, because some kids whose parents push them into show business, it, you know, it doesn't always make for the happiest relationships or our happiest lives. And I'm picturing you on that bed thinking, oh, Dad, come on, I want to go out play ball. No, but you liked it. It was fun.
Well, it's sort of, but, you know, like most kids at age, you don't want to do what your parents want you to do. You know, you get your own ideas. And I certainly had a pile of them, you know. I wanted to, you know, get into music and, you know, painting. And I had a lot of different interests. And my father said, oh, Jeff, don't be ridiculous. You know, that's the wonderful thing about acting is you get to incorporate all of your interests in your parts. And you'll get to, you know, do some music and all of that. It'll facilitate that stuff. And he was right. I'm glad I listened to him. But I resisted going into acting for quite a while, as a matter of fact. Long after Picture Show, I was still considering, hey, do I really want to do this for the rest of my life, you know, as my main focus of my professional life, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think of all these actors we've interviewed who spent 15 years waiting tables in New York and doing plays and commercials, hoping to break into it, and you had a real entree and you weren't so sure about it. Was there a turning point in which you said, yeah, this is it?
Yeah, there was. And also, you know, the whole nepotism thing. That's not, you know, something a kid wants to avoid, you know, getting a job just because of who his dad is. But that was kind of the case on my part. And so that, you know, that caused some resistance. And the turning point was late in my career. I had done quite a few films. and I just finished a movie called The Last American Hero. And normally after a movie, you know, you don't want to get up and do another one right away. That kind of, I don't know, pretend muscle or whatever you use making movies is kind of, you know, spent and have other things to do. And right after I finished that movie, I got a call from my agent saying that John Frankenheimer wanted to cast me in The Iceman Cometh, along with Frederick March and Lee Marvin and Robert Ryan were going to be in it. And I said, oh, well, thanks a lot, Jack, but I'm bushed. I'll tell him I'll pass. Thank him, though. And about a minute after I hung up, Lamont Johnson, the director I just worked with, called me up, and he said, I understand that you've turned down The Iceman Cometh. And I said, yeah, I'm bushed, Lamont, you know. And he says, bushed, you're an ass. And he hung up the phone. And I thought, oh, gee, well, maybe I'll try a little experiment on myself. Maybe I'll just do this movie, and maybe it'll be the final nail in the acting coffin for me. You know, I'll say, oh, this was a terrible experience. I'll do something else. And it turned to be quite a unique experience for many reasons, but one being that we had 8 weeks rehearsal. You know, usually if you're lucky, you've got a couple of weeks. And we shot the movie for 2 weeks. And it turned out to be a four-hour movie. So it was, you know, long scenes, shot like a play, like we were doing a play, basically. And I got to hang out with these old masters a lot, you know. And they were just as anxious as I was about getting it right, you know, doing the material justice. And watching these guys dealing with their flop sweat and their anxiety and all that was kind of heartening for me. And I learned that that's not something that goes away. I remember Robert Ryan doing a scene with him, and you know, we started to do the scene, and then they said, oh, no, we got to stop the camera, fix a light or something. And he takes his hands off the table, and there are big puddles of sweat there on the table. And I said, Bob, guy, after all these years, you're nervous? What is this? And he said, oh, I'd really be scared if I wasn't scared. Yeah. You know, he just had, you know, incorporated that that anxiety into his work. And, you know, a part of it is a good thing. It's what makes you learn your lines and, you know, get it right, you know.
You know, you come from a family of actors, and your brother, Bo, of course, also had a career. You guys appeared in some films together, Fabulous Baker Boys. What's it been like to have a brother who's a successful actor, too?
Yeah, well, right along with my dad, my brother, Bo, was my teacher. He taught me so much about acting. One of the challenges for, you know, actors starting out is, where do you perform? And Bo, and this is, I must have been, you know, 16 years old, he came up with this great idea of renting a flatbed truck, and we would pull into a supermarket, and our father, Lloyd, taught us how to stage fight, you know, fake fight, and we would stage this fake fight. And crowd would, you know, gather around in the parking lot watching these two guys go at each other. And then we'd say, you know, break our fight up. And we'd say, no, we're putting on a show. And we'd jump on the back of the flatbed truck and perform our scenes that we'd worked on until the police came. And then they would be very upset because we would try to do an improv with them and try to bring them into our show. And they were really starting to get serious. We'd say, no, we're leaving. And we'd get back into the truck and we'd go to the next supermarket. And we played the supermarket circuit that way. But Bo, you know, helped me with, getting an agent and, you know, all of that. And then working with him in Fabulous Baker Boys. Oh, that was just a dream come true, you know.
And you guys had a fight in that, didn't you?
Oh, we had a terrible fight. Yeah, we had a fight. We were so thrilled from the story that I just told you that we were going to have this fight. And Steve Clovis, it was his first movie, director, and we asked Steve if we could gaff this fight. And he said, sure, yeah. So we had it all arranged. And but we forgot a very important element. Which was a safe word, a word that would say, no, you're really hurting me. Stop doing what you're doing. And so at the climax of the fight, my character grabs my brother's hand. He's a piano player. And I proceed to bend his fingers back. And Bo's saying, stop, you're hurting me. And I'm thinking in my mind, yeah, act your ass off, man. And I sent him to the hospital. He hurt his fingers terribly. So you must have a safe word, people.
We have to talk about The Big Lebowski, the film that you made with the Coen brothers, 1998. And let's start with a classic scene from the film. You play this, what we'd call an aging stoner, Jeff Lebowski, but a guy who's known to all of his friends as the Dude. And we'll listen to a scene early in the film. And what's happened is that a couple of tough guys broke into your apartment looking for money they said you owed. It turned out they were confusing you with another guy named Jeff Lebowski, who's a rich guy. But before these tough guys left, one of them peed on the rug in your living room. And in the scene we're going to hear, you've come to see the rich Lebowski to ask him to cover the damage. And Mr. Lebowski, who is played by David Huddleston, speaks first. Let's listen.
What can I do for you, sir?
Well, sir, it's this rug I have. It really tied the room together.
You told Brandt on the phone. He told me. Where do I fit in?
Well, they were looking for you, these two guys.
Say it again. You told Brandt on the phone. He told me. I know what happened. Yes, yes.
Oh, so you know that they were trying to f*** on your rug.
Did I urinate on your rug?
You mean, did you personally come and pee on my rug?
Hello. Do you speak English, sir? Parla usted inglés? I'll ask you again. Did I urinate on your rug?
No, like I said, woo, or pee on my rug.
I just want to understand this, sir. Every time a rug is micturated upon in this fair city, I have to compensate the person?
Come on, man. I'm not trying to scam anybody here.
You're just looking for a handout like every other... Are you employed, Mr. Lebowski?
Let me explain something to you. I am not Mr. Lebowski. You're Mr. Lebowski. I'm the Dude. So that's what you call me, you know? His dudeness or El Duderino, if you're not into the whole brevity thing.
Are you employed, sir?
Employed?
You don't go out looking for a job dressed like that, do you? On a weekday?
What day is this?
Well, I do work, sir. So if you don't mind...
No, I do mind. The Dude minds. This will not stand, you know? This aggression will not stand, man.
It's still funny. And that's our guest, Jeff Bridges, in The Big Lebowski. How did you get the Dude?
Well, for one thing, the clothes, Mary Zofri's the costume designer on that film, you know, came over to my house and we said, let's go look in my closet and see if we got anything in there that might be handy. And then, you know, in there we found the Dude's jelly shoes, you know, that weird Asian baseball player shirt. You know, a lot of the clothes were mine. So that was very helpful. And, when I first heard about The Big Lebowski, it was maybe a year or two before the film, and Joel and Ethan, I saw them somewhere, and they said, hey, we're writing something for you. I said,
the Coen
wonderful.
Brothers, right?
Because I was, the Coen Brothers, because I was, I'm a big fan of Blood Simple and some of their earlier stuff, And then I got the script, and, I had no memory of any role that I had ever played like that. It felt like they had, gone to some of my high school parties or, I don't know where they got, why they were writing that specifically for me. But I guess they were onto something because it did kind of, fit some of my, my MO and my... my characteristics, my hair, my look, that sort of thing.
I remember when we first see you in The Big Lebowski, I think you're coming down a supermarket aisle looking for milk for your white Russians, and you're wearing these jelly shoes, some shorts that might even be boxer underwear, and they're just barely shorts, and a T-shirt, sunglasses, and a bathrobe. that's kind of just tells the story of this guy almost.
Yeah, that's right. Those guys, those brothers, the Coen brothers, they really know how to make movies. And it's just like falling off a log, or it appears to be just falling off a log for them, you know. You don't see the effort in their stuff. But that script is so well written, and the characters are all so well defined. This is a joy to watch. I still, you know, I'm one of those guys. Oh, a movie of mine comes on the tube, on the TV, I'll, you know, watch a scene and then turn the channel. But when Lebowski comes on, I say, well, I'll just wait till Maude comes, you know, flying down on the from the ceiling, nude, you know, splatters paint all over the dude, and then I'll say, well, no, I'll just stick to, you know, see Turturro lick the ball, you know, and I get sucked in, you know, I end up watching the whole thing.
Yeah, one of those movies that never gets old. The film, of course, has this huge following. There are screenings where people show up in character.
Yeah.
Do you ever go to these things? Do you welcome this?
I went to one. I had my Beatle moment at one. I have a band.
That, right. The Abiders.
Called the Abiders. Mm-hmm. Some people think that we're the Biters, and us the Abiders. The Biters is not a bad title for a group. But anyway, the Abiders, we once played a Lebowski Fest. And, you know, I came out, the dude, and you look out there and you're playing to a sea of dudes. They're all dressed up like the dudes or bowling pins or Maude. You know, they all have the different characters.
Well, we have to talk about Crazy Heart, the 2010 film based on a novel by Thomas Cobb, directed by Scott Cooper. This is the story of an aging musician. You play this musician named Bad Blake, country singer and songwriter who was once on the top, whose career is now on the skids, mostly due to his very serious drinking problem. And I wanted to play a scene. Here you're speaking to a younger country singer, Bobby Sweet, who's played by Colin Farrell. This is a singer who your character helped start his career, but now you're struggling and he's on top, and you're in the position of looking for help from him, you know, an album or a concert tour or something.
Hey, how come we're not doing another album, huh? Why won't you do it?
Hold up now. I never said I wouldn't. DMZ just doesn't think it's the right thing to do, that's all.
I think it is.
Well, you may be right. They want a couple more solos first, then we do a duet. You got first shot, I already told them.
You know, I need money now. I'm 57 years old. Career's going nowhere. I need something to get a jump started. Won't give me a damn solo album. I need this, damn, I really do.
I swear, Bad, I can't get them to budge on this one. But there is a way you can make some money if you want to.
Enlighten me.
Songs. I ain't got no new material. Everything I'm hearing is straight crap. You write me 5 new songs, I'll give you back end. I ship 2 million albums every time I release them.
I've written a new song in 3 years. Too many damn songs.
Now you write some of the best material out there, Bad. I want some.
Wrote. Not right.
And that's our guest Jeff Bridges with Colin Farrell in the film Crazy Heart. You won a Best Actor Oscar for this. When you get a role, you like to look in yourself for what's there of that character, maybe your friends. Do you remember how you got this guy, Bad Blake?
Yeah, well, Scott Cooper, the director, one of Scott's first bits of directions is that Bad Blake would have been the fifth Highwayman, you know, that great group with, you know, Willie Nelson and, Chris and Waylon Jennings and Johnny Cash, you know. So Bad Blake was like those guys. That was a big help. And so I looked towards, some of these great country heroes, like, you know, Waylon Jennings, you know, kind of studied that. Towns Van Sant, you know, looked at him, kind of soaked up those guys. And then we were both, everybody on the show was so fortunate to have Stephen Bruton on board, who our movie is dedicated to Stephen Bruton. Stephen was T-Bone, Burnett's best friend. Stephen's no longer with us. He passed away shortly after the movie was finished. But he was the real thing. He was a musician who was making his living on the road, you know, and he was with me every day, you know, giving me guitar lessons. I play guitar, but nothing like Stephen, you know, so he helped me out a lot with that.
Well, you know, I want to come back to the beginning of the film here. You know, you do all the musical performances in this, and I know you're a musician, so there was no lip syncing here. And I want to catch a little bit of one of these performances. This is very early in the film when your character, Bad Blake, is now reduced, you know, to driving from town to town, playing small gigs with local bands as backups, you know, that you kind of just improvise it and work together. And in this scene we're going to hear, you're up on stage in a bowling alley, and one of the local musicians introduces you. Let's just listen to a bit of this. And that is our guest, Jeff Bridges, a singing in the film, yeah. Crazy Heart. That's that song, somebody else, written by the late Stephen Bruton and T-Bone Burnett. You know, you're clearly accustomed to performing. This is something you do a lot. In this film, you have to perform impaired by alcohol. I'm wondering what that was like. Did you drink and practice?
I probably rehearsed and, you know, experienced that in rehearsal. I had made the mistake early in my career to say, oh, it's a drunk scene. I think I'll just get drunk, you know. But that doesn't work so good, I learned. Because you got the rest of the day and then you got the next day and you don't want to be hungover, you know. So I didn't, you know. Sometimes I'll take, if I'm supposed to be, you know, playing a drunk scene, I'll just take a little, you know, to have a... You know, just put a little bit on my tongue just to have it kind of, you know, and wear it as cologne almost. I'll put some, you know, on my beard and stuff. It's make me smell that stuff.
You know, one of the other things I noticed watching this film is how you managed to look just terrible. I mean, physically, a guy whose body is ravaged by, you know, all that drinking and too many cigarettes and a terrible diet. And I'm just wondering if there are things that you did to get there. I mean, did you decided to gain weight? Did you? I don't know how you pulled off that.
Yeah, well, you take off the governor, you know, you let everything just kind of, you kind of do what you want. You know, you don't shy away from your Haagen-Dazs, you know, you drink when you feel like it, you know, that kind of thing. And then, of course, makeup helps a lot, you know. You know, putting a little fine, you know, busted blood vessels in your nose and stuff, you know, subtle stuff. But it all kind of adds up. It's cumulative.
And putting on all that stuff helps you get the character?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, in the morning, you know, you come up to, you get in there in the makeup trailer, and you put on some country tunes, and you start to get the guy who's painted on, you get your costume on, and it's all, you know, you're starting to come together, and when you walk out your dressing room door, there's the guy.
You mentioned that you get anxious still with roles. Have you developed techniques over the years on how to deal with that anxiety?
Well, I meditate, you know, I do that. That helps a lot. You know, that line from Lebowski, that's just your opinion, man, you know. That can be, you can say that to yourself too, because, you know, most of us, I don't know, I can only speak for myself, but we all have these little voices in our heads saying, you know, who do you think you are? You think you're going to pull this thing off, you know? And, you know, that's just, you know, your opinion, man, you know? So you really don't know what's going on, but you, so, you know, I could, you know, do, you know, talk about that a little bit. My wife, you know, she often gives me the phrase that my mother used to give me when I would go off to do a job as a teenager. And my mom used to say, now remember, have fun and don't take it too seriously. And, oh, thank you. So now I get my wife to say that to me, and that kind of calms me down. And if I'm on my game, I remember that.
Well, I guess the other thing is you work really hard. If you're ready, that'll help, right?
If you're ready, that, you know, preparation is a lot. That really scratches the anxiety itch, you know, to work on the thing. You know, that really helps. Be as prepared as you can, then let it rip.
How did your father feel about your career?
Oh, man, he was so proud when I won the Academy Award. I wished he would have, and he and my mom could have been there, because they would have really loved that moment. But, he just, you know, was very proud of both his guys, both his boys.
And I'm sure you were proud of a lot of the stuff he did well into, you know, his later years.
Oh, my dad? Oh, yeah. God. Oh, yeah. Incredibly proud of him. You know, I remember doing a movie, Blown Away. And I went to the producer and said, you know, I have a good actor. I know a good actor who could play my uncle. He kind of looks like me, and a wonderful actor, Lloyd Bridges. And the producer said, well, he is a good actor, but he's really more of a comedian. I said, what are you talking about, man? He says, yeah, well, you know, the airplane movies. Right. And I say, oh, my God, you're going to make him come in and read for the part? And the guy said, would he come in and read? And I say, well, he wants the part, but yeah. So my dad came in, we read together. Of course, he got the part. But that thing of, developing too strong a persona, you know, my dad, you know, early on in his career, he did that Sea Hunt, you know, TV show, and everybody thought he did such a great job, everybody thought he was a skin diver. So he got a lot of skin diving scripts, you know. And then when he got the comedy thing, they think he's that, you know. So you gotta watch that. I really, early on in my career, I really went about trying, to not develop too strong a persona for that very reason.
Well, Jeff Bridges, it's been fun. Thanks so much for spending some time with us.
Great hanging with you. Thanks for having me.
Jeff Bridges stars with Ben Foster and Chris Pine in the modern Western Hell or High Water. Coming up, Maureen Corrigan reviews a collection of essays from 89-year-old tough girl Betty Fussell. This is Fresh Air.